Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presented its sixth annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronzegeist and Sarah Benora, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry, MVT Productions, Rhoda Construction, Wilson Investment Properties, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
We're going to start our night with calling up Christopher Thornburg first. Dr. Thornburg is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. He's been involved in a number of special studies measuring the impact of important events in the economy, including the NAFTA Treaty, California power crisis, pool security, and September 11th terrorist attacks. For the first time, we're joined by John Burns. John and his 40-person team advise executives on major residential real estate industry decisions all over the country. The company is on the retainer with many of the largest companies in real estate and investment industries, producing ongoing research and advice. This man has a lot of credibility, and I'm glad he's here tonight because there's a piece of the puzzle I'm confused by, and John, I'm really glad that you're here. And it took... Whatever you want to say, it's fine. What about demographics? And I'll ask both of you this question. Demographics inside of the next 10 years, is it a different story in the second 10 years, when real estate really is, the baby boom generation is really tossing out a lot more homes than can be absorbed? Is there a difference in those two decades, I guess?
I don't think so. Not that much. I think you're going to find as time goes on, those boomers are going to be reluctant to leave.
Well, they're not going. We don't want to leave, but that's what happens.
But
20 years from now, most of us are going to leave.
Because whatever. You're missing my point. I'm sorry.
30, okay?
Yes. I don't think they're going to let go on that front either, but that's a different issue. No, look, you're dealing with a world in which population growth is still increasing. The boomers are not that big. What they are is a sort of a convex point. My generation, the slackers, you know, X, we're actually larger on a year-by-year basis than the boomers are, just not much larger. So there's still lots of demand out there. So, and with immigration, if we ever get some immigration reform, that's obviously bringing it on shore. And you said yourself, look at all the foreign buyers moving. And a lot of folks are interested in being here, and they're going to make their way here one way or the other.
Okay. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we're actually doing a lot of research on this right now, and I'll end with a couple of boomer stats. There's 40% of the owned households right now are owned by somebody 55 or older. So we're
40% of
the owned households are owned by someone 55 and older. And
okay.
That's just going up. And we treat everybody over 55 as if they're one person. We don't treat a 25, 35, and 45-year-old the same. Why do we treat a 55 and over? And there's a lot of product opportunities for 65, 75, and my great statistic there is that the largest master plan community in the country is called the Villages, which is outside Orlando. They sell about 3,000 homes per year. They have 50,000 golf carts in the Villages. It's true. Some of them are worth like $30,000. But anyway, the typical resident in the Villages, you can't get into your 55, but the typical resident there buys 2.5 homes. So they buy while they still own the home in Michigan, and they're kind of spending half their time. Then they move full-time after they sell the home in Michigan and upgrade to something bigger. And then they need something that's a little lower maintenance and more assisted, and then they buy their third home. Okay. And you're going to start talking about segmentation in this older group now. There's a lot of opportunity there. And that is not what our resale stock looks like at all.
Okay. Has the definition of household changed a lot since, let's say, 25 years ago, where before it was two adults that are married and 2.3 kids? And how has that changed what we can afford?
Well, that's an interesting question. America is very unique, is that we expect to throw our kids out when they become adults. The rest of the country welcomes them to hang around. The rest of the world welcomes them to hang around. Of course, you want to live with mom and dad. Why wouldn't you want to buy a home with your brother? Seriously, because then you help it. The Hispanic families do that. You got built-in babysitting. There's a lot of things going on there. And you're joking, but this is how the rest of the, and our percentage of population is growing from these groups. The Pew Center put out a study. I think 17% of households now live multi-generationally, which means there's two generations of adults in the home. How many homes were built designed like that? Not a lot.
Right.
So, it is changing, and the baby boomers actually like their kids, and are encouraging them to stay in the house when they're in their early 20s. And the kids are saying, "Hey, this is a pretty good deal." So that's been a pretty big change too.
Well, that's been a change to household creation too,
big time.
Because
I think that's part of the reason behind that lack of entry level buyer is they're saying, "I can live for free with mom and dad, and I don't have to worry about what's in the fridge."
Well, you know, when you have your family, you know, I've got a son, Aaron, that's in that kind of age range, and it seems like in the last year or two, everybody made the adult decision to get out of the back bedroom. So I don't know if that's that generation sort of had it with living there, or the mom and dad is tired of them being there, but that's going to create some households, it looks like to me.
And I agree. And when they have kids, I think that's the ultimate, okay, I got to get out of the house.
Right, or they finally get married. Christopher, any thoughts on the household formation or the household changing?
Well, I mean, there's good news is the household formation starting to pick up with the improving economy, and obviously that's good news for the housing industry. As for, you know, the idea of size of households, number of people per household continues to fall in the U.S. It's not going up, it's going down.
But that's skewed by the fact that we're living longer. So that's what's dragging it down, and then your 25-year-old is dragging it up. But he's right.
Okay. Anything I should have asked that I didn't?
Yeah, you want to ask me about my Prop 13 comment?
You're for Prop 13, no? No. Okay.
We're good.
We'll talk about that later. Okay, thank you guys very much. All right, our next two panelists are going to come up. I'll first introduce Leslie Appleton-Young. Leslie is the Vice President and Chief Economist of the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 195,000 members. No?
164.
31,000 of them bit the dust. But they're coming back. Yeah, that's fine. No one wants me to read their bio. She's actually one of my favorite interviews, and my all-time favorite, I think I'll save this phone call. When I first interviewed her on the radio, she didn't know me from Adam, and she was sick. And she said, "How long is this?" And I said, 2 25-minute segments, and you could just hear on the other end of the phone going, "Oh, no." But she speaks a lot. You can get pretty tired doing that. Well, they went well. The interviews went really well. She said, actually, that was really the best interviews I've ever had. And within an hour, we gave her a gift basket full of medical, like medicine stuff and all that.
It was full of Campbell's soup. It was adorable. But the other backstory to us is I heard that someone was grumbling about our housing affordability index and the methodology changed. And this person that was grumbling very loudly in the Inland Empire was named Bruce Norris. And I called him up. And it was love at first sight.
we've had a good relationship. But she called and left a message saying it wasn't necessary to do the gift basket. with tears in her voice. And it's really my all-time favorite recording, so I've kept it forever. Sean O'Toole is, the creator of Foreclosure Radar and now Property Radar. Sean was a successful trustee sale buyer, having bought over 150 properties. He's become a friend of mine. And we actually disagree on some pretty major things once in a while. But the one thing that we really have developed is a trust in each other's intent and process. And so one of my favorite things is, okay, we both do each the honor of setting aside what we thought we knew completely to listen to the other side of the table as best we can. And that's hard to do because, you know, we both study really hard for our conclusions, and the tendency would be as soon as he says something, I go, well, no, but what about this? But if you can give up winning for just a minute, you actually can go, okay, you have a point. And so we each add a piece of the puzzle when we come up to better conclusions. And so I'm probably going to have to go through some of that tonight in front of you guys. So welcome to both of you. And Leslie, we'll start with you. Just delivered your sort of state of the real estate for 2014. So what do you expect? Well, I'm going to go down a list of some things. Volume of sales.
Volume of sales will be up 3-4% next year.
Okay. Are we starting this year with less inventory?
No.
With more?
We've had an uptick in inventory for the last 3 months or so.
Year over year, though. Are we starting this year with less in 2000?
Yes, but the gap is closing.
Gap's closing?
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we now? We're 3.1?
It was 3.1. It's now 3.6. 3.7 was the data that came out for September. And that's a ratio of listings to sales.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's because you think, did sales go down? They kind of might have.
Yeah, and a little bit. But, you know, you had one of those slides that showed the really sharp reduction in underwater mortgages in California. And that's one of the things that's feeding into inventory. A little bit. You also have a little bit more, you know, investors were, you know, renting out properties. 82% in one of the surveys that we do, 82% of the investors were renting out instead of flipping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's starting to change. You're seeing a little bit more emphasis on the flipping.
Okay.
On the flipping now. So those two things are helping to get inventory going. You also have sellers that were on the sidelines kind of watching the market. And, when rates started to go up in May, I think the whole tenor of the market started to change a little bit. And even though rates are still remarkably low, they're not as low as they were. And that got some of the sellers on the sidelines getting into the market. But the market's overshooting itself, so we're seeing more discounts from list price because everyone is overly optimistic typically when they list their home. So the dynamic, we really are, I think, at a bit of a tipping point in terms of market dynamics.
Okay. The mix of sales has really radically changed year over year. So now
Huge. We're
really getting back to what would be a normal percent of equity sales, let's say in years that were not really affected by
like 90-95%.
Yeah.
You know, and we're almost there. I think we're at over 87% retail or traditional sales. And it's really messed up the median home price because our median home price has been up 1 month this year. It was up 30% of it on a year-over-year basis. And it really was just two-thirds of that was really a change in the mix of what was selling. So that's why we're seeing...
We don't want to hear that.
I'm sorry, but that's why that's why this year the California median home price is up, I don't know, I can't remember any numbers right now, but 27%, something like that, and our forecast for next year is 6%, because all of that mix adjustment has pretty much played itself out.
So you're really looking at your price projection for median price for 2014 was 440?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something around there. So 6% increase over this year.
And what are we, 440 now? I just have to mess with you a little bit.
Selma, help me.
I think we were at 440.
We're close.
But what's interesting is median is really one of the longest pricing structures. And it's consistently inaccurate, but at least it's consistent.
You know, I'm going to take that hit and say that I am an agnostic when it comes to data. I just want to know what it is. And I agree. The median home price the last couple of years has been ridiculous. Average home prices have been even worse. Doing a quartile analysis makes a lot more sense. The Case-Shiller Index, which really isn't buffeted by changes in the mix of what's selling, is great. I mean, that's one of the big differences in the 30 years I've been at CAR. You know, we used to, way back when, be the only game in town for California data, and now you've got, you know, Trulia and Zillow and FHFA, and everybody's out there with their numbers. And I think the good thing is eventually everybody tells the same story, right? So in 2012, you know, everyone could breathe a sigh of relief because the national housing market and national housing prices were all telling the same story, right? Everybody was up. But in California, that happened 3 years earlier because of people like you that sold in 2005 and bought like crazy in 2007, right?
Well, a little 08? Later than
08?
That.
08? Okay, well, yeah.
Okay. Sean, you have done really a fabulous job of making buying foreclosures easier for the masses. Thank you very much. No, it really has changed the dynamics. If you've ever tried to get a list of properties years ago, it was thousands of dollars. And I always think it's funny when you talk to people that are really young and they look at his website and you, $50 or whatever it is, just they can't. Why would you pay that? And just, you have no idea what you're talking about. My goodness. So what do the numbers look like to you, let's say, a year ago to now, as far as REO count? There's still this suspicion. We really want there to be shadow inventory that's going to creep up and bite us, but do you see that?
I mean, both new foreclosure starts and foreclosure sales both down about 60% year over year.
Okay.
You know, it's still people come to me and say, you know, you switch from foreclosure radar to property radar because the foreclosures are gone. You know, our customers bought $500 million worth of property last month at the courthouse steps. So, you know, it's still, there's still a little business there.
Yeah.
For sure. And in fact, with property radar, we improved our foreclosure features. So I think foreclosures are going to be with us for a while. We still have a lot of folks underwater. But clearly, foreclosures are way down. I mean, look, we've had the federal government, the state government, just about everybody say that foreclosures are the problem, and they set out to stop foreclosures, and they've been relatively successful. Now, whether or not foreclosures are the problem, I think it's a whole different question. I think it's negative equity. There, we're only down about 50% in California from when this all started.
We're down, what now, the numbers of people that have a negative?
Folks underwater in their home has only dropped about 50%.
5-0. Okay.
Think about how far into this we are.
Yeah, it's a long ways.
For those folks that are still underwater, I don't think this feels like much of a recovery.
No. No, and there's areas that were, what, over double, you know, or half their, the value of their property was half of their loan amount, so that has taken longer for those people. Are those people, are enough of them delinquent that we could have any issue with lots of inventory showing up, you know, and assisting the 3.7 months to getting to 6 months?
Yeah, roughly a third of them right now are delinquent or in foreclosure, one of the two.
And they're delinquent a fair percentage of day. I mean, it's a long time. They're not going to make that loan current, apparently.
Yeah, I think you know, there's no question we've made huge improvements on principal balance loan modifications, short sales. But, you know, just again today, the servicers kind of reaffirmed that they've met all the national servicing requirements. You know, 2012 was kind of the year of the short sale, and part of that was because there were huge incentives to the banks to push short sales through.
Mm-hmm.
That ended at the end of the year. Now, short sales are still a pretty important part of the market right now. Still, you know, short sales and REOs are 25% of home sales.
Right? In California?
So, yeah, when people say they're gone, that's still a pretty substantial percentage of the market.
Okay, if we have 87% equity sellers, is it, how do we get to 25? I'm not being argumentative.
I disagree with that number.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know that was going to happen.
Well, we look at the MLS data of properties that closed in a given month. So the data that just came out was like 87% traditional equity, about 3.5% REO, and about 10% right. short sale. So I don't know if those numbers are right or wrong in the global context, but certainly in the context of MLS data, I feel pretty confident about them.
We are measuring apples and oranges, too. Okay. I'm looking at public records data.
Right.
And so we, of course, know which houses the banks have foreclosed on, so we track that, which ones they've resold. And then we also we estimate how much debt folks have, and if they sell at a price below that debt, we call that a short sale, whether or not the person came out of their pocket. It was still a distressed sale. They may have maybe came up with money out of their pocket instead of the lender taking the hit. And then you have the issues of, you know, MLS data is great, but you don't always have people listed as a short sale or an REO. So we're going to pick that up even though it may not. And we're going to pick up all the pocket listings and the bulk sales and all of these other things that never hit the MLS.
While we were driving over, you shared with me that you have, you know, your own feeling about what the median price movement was. But then you, since you have access to a new toy, you said, okay, something about the distressed inventory moved differently than non-distressed inventory. So share with us what was going on there.
So by our data, we have a median price increase from last year of about 25%. We put it at 400,000 right now, so a little lower.
Okay.
And what's interesting about that, though, is we broke that into two groups, distressed and non-distressed, right? And distressed sales are up about 16%. The median price of all distressed sales was up about 16%. Right? So you think, wow, the median price of non-distressed had to go up quite a lot to make up for that. But that's only up 10%. The rest is a shift.
You're making my head
from
hurt,
mostly from a lot more distressed,
right,
to a lot more non-distressed. So when you take the median price, it moved up, even though prices in those two groups moved up considerably less. The mix moved it up more. So, you know, did home values go up 25%? I don't think so.
No. But there's a much stronger demand for distressed properties than there is for the traditional equity sales. And the inventory is lower and the price appreciation is still higher. Absolutely.
What's going to happen to first-time buyers, you think, in 2014? And why aren't they a participant to the extent, percentage-wise, that they normally would be at this
stage?
They
want to participate, but they can't. They don't have a job. They don't have a down payment. They have student loan debt. They can't compete with all cash buyers. FHA is no longer a competitive program for many of them.
Why?
Because the fees are up, and loan limits may be coming down. I mean, there's a lot of things on the horizon that are going to impact them negatively. So that's one of the really problems with something like the Housing Affordability Index, because it gives you a number, but it doesn't give you the context of the market.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Claudia Buys Houses, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, Phoebe, for investors by investors, Homevestors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Inc., John Merrill Investments Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, REIExpo.com, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez, The Bottom Feeders, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, and Westin South Coast Plaza. CISurvivedRealEstate.com for video of the live event and more on our sponsors.